Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 531 for comics originally released on October 11th, 2017. Now, starting us off in DC is Gotham City Garage number 1. This is another one of the Digital First series that kind of follows in the tradition of Ami Kami Girls, Injustice, DC Bombshells, and even though it's not Digital First that I'm aware of, I'm going to toss Superhero Girls in this category. And it's something where they take the iconic DC characters, do a totally different take on them, and just tell some stories with it. With Ami Kami Girls, it was an anime take on it. Injustice was based on the video game and a little bit dark, not quite dystopic, but it's been going 6-7 years, so that's probably the most successful. Bombshells was based on the cover images, I think. This is based on a series of DC collectible statues, and I'm sure I've probably seen these somewhere, but honestly, they didn't really register for me at all, so I've got no connection to the source material of this whatsoever.
Yeah, at least with Bombshells, it was a little more recognizable as, oh yes, the series of statues. Yes, I get that. Mm-hmm. I get the inspiration. This, I do not get the inspiration point. Maybe I've seen them around in cons and things, but I don't know. It doesn't stand out as well.
Yeah, with Bombshells, they also did the covers. So I think we'd seen more of them, even if just in solicits and stuff. I don't know that they've done a series of covers based on this or not. I think we're both kind of, it's an interesting idea, I guess. I wonder what it is. And I'll be honest, some of these sorts of titles have been fun. Some have been much better than others. Again, I point to Injustice as the most successful of the bunch in terms of let's take the DC characters and go in a different direction. The others tend to be more radically different takes on the characters. The World War II era or whatever for Bombshells. This is a... Well, it's funny because this series is set 35 years after, quote-unquote, Luthor Rise, which I don't know exactly what it is, but I'm going to assume it's the rise of Luthor and maybe not a good thing. Because this is also set in, what do they call it? Garden, the last city on Earth. Anytime you've got the last city on Earth, it's like, that's not good for the rest of the planet. But this is sort of, from my take, almost a cliche post-apocalyptic sort of a setting. We've seen this last city on Earth riff tons of times before in various ways, shapes, or form, whether it's literally the last city on Earth. Everything from kind of a Mad Max sort of a thing. Heck, Power Rangers did a season where there was the one city that was left. And then one of the ones I want to reference is the Island City. I think it was a pilot for a TV show from 1994 that was, okay, this is the Island City. It's the last city on Earth. They'd go out, have adventures or whatever. It's notable for starring Kevin Conroy. And yes, that Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman, but it was a live action role for him. So this last city on Earth thing, seen a dozen of times, if not more, it's cliche, but that's the setting. The story they're telling, actually, I found fairly interesting and intriguing and went in different directions than I had expected, because I didn't really expect anything in particular. Other than, frankly, based on the cover, I was expecting a stronger presence of Harley Quinn, and maybe she would be the title character. She was not. And I really loved how this title had a very fascinating mix of kind of hopeful, uplifting sorts of things, but also a sense of darkness and dystopic aspect. It's a utopian take on a dystopia, almost, if you know what I mean. It was a bizarre juxtaposition, but it really worked. And I found this to have a lot more story than probably Ami Kami Girls or Bombshells. Or maybe not more story, but more story that resonated with me. That's the better way to put it. This actually, I think, has some legs to stand on and could be kind of the next Injustice.
I was, I think this is closer to Injustice than it is DC Bombshells. Unfortunately, it was solicited almost like a DC Bombshells Part 2, and I wonder if it's going to alienate people out of the gate saying, I don't want any more of that, or I tried that, and it wasn't for me, because this doesn't read like that at all. It's much stronger than that title. I feel like it was kind of a disservice during the pre-order cycle to say that this is, you know, inspired by statues as part of the whole thing, because it's way more than that. And that could have been an interior page, like, thanks to the Bob Kane for creating Batman or whatever, something, a line like that, you know, it could have been thrown in there, like in characters loosely based on this line of statues or something. It didn't have to be the basis of how this thing was pitched. And I think that was a misstep, marketing wise. But that being said, there's a lot of fun stuff in here, man. It's yet another Elseworlds type story. And for those of us who read a lot of these Elseworlds in DC, it can be confusing. you there's a lot of stuff going on in Injustice and All-Star Batman that's different, and Metal that's different, and the regular line. So, you know,
Metal isn't an Elseworlds, by the
way. Yeah, but it sure feels like it. It sure doesn't feel like your standard fare.
It's not your standard fare, but I mean, I agree that this Bombshells
and Injustice. It's another world, though, right?
It's the mainstream DC.
Dark.
There's the dark multiverse. There are other worlds in it, but it is taking place in the same narrative universe with the same Batman, Superman as Justice League, Batman, Superman, all those other titles. Whereas this is set in, theoretically, a completely different reality.
Right. You get my confusion.
Not entirely, but we'll go. I can see where it can be confusing.
The listeners, you get my confusion. John doesn't, but you do, listeners. You feel my pain.
Well,
you're on my side.
That depending how you stack your DC books, you can never have two books in the same continuity some weeks.
It's quite possible.
You'd have to go every other one with the mainstream, of course. But if you toss in, again, Commandy Challenge, this, or Bombshells, or Injustice, or a few others, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that being said, if you can handle that and handle a bunch of universes and not worry about getting too confused like me, it's fun. You've got a Supergirl here in name, actually in her power set, but yet she's raised by Jim Gordon, which is kind of cool. And you've got a Batman who's really evil and a henchman for Lex, which is really cool and a different. And you've got a futuristic world that's got some really cool things happening in it. And so it's fun. It's very Injustice-y in that regard. And there's lots of fun stuff happening that you're not getting elsewhere. And, you know, you can kind of enjoy that. The art is different. So it's a stylized art. And I think John and I have had a conversation about eyes in a previous review. And there's some really, really weird eyes going on here, but not a lot of consistency in the quality of the eyes being drawn. But yeah, if you can handle the stylized art and you like Elseworldian takes, this could be fun for you.
Yeah, I thought overall it was well done. There were one or two things that I kind of, it's like, I'm not sure I totally get the motivation behind this. I mean, in other words, were this a real world, what would have led to certain things? Specifically, and I don't know that they were named, so I'm going to call them the evil bat bots, which are the robots that have the Batman cowl and the assault rifles. It's like, okay, I'll grant the assault rifles. Why build in the weapons when they could jam up and you want to swap them or whatever? It's like, okay, assault rifles are available, they'll just use them. The trench coats, however, for the robots, interesting stylistic choice. Did they get cold? Do they need that for some other reason? I mean, it's a cool visual. It's a Batman visual, but I don't know. It's just things like that intrigue me. The use of Supergirl and having her raised by Gordon worked surprisingly well. And then at the end of this, they put a twist on that that really makes me wonder what happened 35 some odd years ago around the time of Luthor Rise, and how did we get here and what's going on with a few other characters that are mentioned but not seen here. It feels like this has a rich backstory to explore at some point beyond just the story they're telling now. And I find that exciting. I find that very intriguing.
Yeah, there are already six of these available digitally. I only read the first two, assuming that would be what the print copy was. And I wanted to be on the same. I wanted us to be on the same page. I'm not sure what those next four have already kind of revealed about this world. And I'm kind of interested in checking it out. Something with I had so low expectations, having come off of a DC Bombshells review not so long ago and having yet another statue inspired series. I really had gutter expectations for this. And so I was really pleasantly surprised by the quality of the storytelling and the interesting stylized art and things that they were doing in this world.
What was your rating on this?
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you give it a rating?
I'm going with a B+. I thought this was solid. I think the really, really nice cover art was making me expect a little bit more out of the interior art that I got. It was good. It was solid, but different style. So not quite in that A range, but it looks like as a series, it definitely can get in there.
Yeah, solid B for me. I would recommend it to anybody who likes Injustice.
How much? Now, you got the digital installments, right?
Yep.
How much did you pay for each of the two? I would imagine 99 cents?
Something like that.
$1.99?
I'd have to look it up.
All right. Because this was $2.99 in print, and with two installments, it's making me wonder,
It'd probably be the same as Injustice, I'm thinking.
I'm wondering if the print is subsidizing the digital or vice versa. Because with two installments, it's either 99 cents or more like, you know, probably, or possibly $1.99, at which point the digital is subsidizing the print, and that seems unlikely. I'm curious. Because at times it feels like as a issue reader, I am subsidizing the trades. And if I'm also doing that for the digital, that makes me kind of...
99 cents.
So I am. Because I paid a buck more, or 99... Well, yeah. Well, actually, I paid $2.99. You paid 99 cents twice, so...
Yeah, you paid more.
Yeah.
Which is not normally the case.
Yeah. Interesting.
I mean, you paid, what, $1.49 with your discount? So you didn't really.
Cover price, though.
If you paid cover price, which you don't,
but right. DC doesn't
so
get
you aren't subsidizing anybody.
Well, hang on, because DC's not getting the full cover price on the digital either. They're getting the same sort of rough percentage through the Comixology stuff as they get through Diamond, I believe. I could be wrong on that, but not radically different. Going digital doesn't actually save them a whole lot in terms of, yeah, they're not printing, but they've got to split the money between Comixology, iTunes, and one or two other places, depending how some of it works.
Yeah, it was a horrible split the last time I looked into it, you know, depending on if they are going through Google Play or iTunes or whatever. Yeah. It's everybody's got their hand out, and it seemed really like a severe cut they were giving up.
Surprisingly so, because I know initially a lot of people, it's digital, you're not printing and shipping, it should be way cheaper, and it's not. But interesting. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah.
This is Falcon number 1, and this is part of the Legacy stuff, but it's confusing because I know the Falcon had a 4-issue limited series
back in
1984, and I think he might have had one more recently. So he should be at least number 5.
At least.
He's getting gypped. It's just not fair.
I'm sure there's some kind of algorithm where if the numbers don't equal X... then we launch with a number 1.
I don't know
what the reason is. I'm guessing. I have no idea what their reasoning is for any of these.
I don't think it's a huge surprise that Sam Wilson is back being Falcon. I mean, other than the fact he let some other kid use the name, and he is now just taking it back a whole hog. Making me wonder, I mean, couldn't Sam have gone with some other name? First one that popped to my mind was American Eagle. Of course, Jason Strongbow is using that, and after that, I was running short on what would be a good kind of aerial patriotic name that he could take, so I guess Falcon's as good as any. I got mixed feelings on the new costume. It's kind of cool, but there's something about it where the torso is just kind of plain and the design's mostly elsewhere that's non-standard and it's taking a little bit for me to get used to. But
it was kind of like that Nightwing redesign, you know, minus the wings.
Well, it's putting the wings down on the lower part of the torso, I mean, it kind of works. It's just, it's different. I need to get used to it. The one part about the costume that really did surprise me is it's apparently bulletproof. And not just a little bit bulletproof, I mean substantially bulletproof. Because early on in this issue, three or four thugs shoot at him at point-blank range, one with what looks like an automatic weapon. And these things just bounce right off, and they're hitting him straight in the chest. And he's not even getting the wind knocked out of him. So good on him for the upgrade. Bad on them for not shooting for the obviously unprotected parts. But, you know, hey, they're thugs. They're not smart. I'm okay with that. There were parts of this issue I liked. There were a few things that I'm probably going to nitpick to death on this. I like the character, and frankly, I'm a little bit more excited about what they're doing here than over in Captain America. Of course, that may change once I read that issue. What were your thoughts on this issue before I nitpick it to death?
You know, it was okay. And, I thought the character was pretty strong towards the end of Captain America. And he had some great speeches. And he was a real leader. And, you know, I was going with him when he was giving up the shield and said, I'm done. I've done my leading and I just want to go back to just being a Falcon. So I was kind of interested in following him and seeing what he did. This was an okay story. These two rival gangs, it's kind of a boring story. It's really nothing special. I didn't like the supernatural thing at the end with Blackheart. I don't know that character, so maybe he's a long-standing character, and
He is, but a fairly forgettable one.
Yeah, so I'm really not interested in that guy, and I'm going to give it a little more. There was some fun stuff with the his partner and him going back and forth with him. That was okay, but for the most part, it was kind of a lackluster start. And as far as a number one and a debut to grab people and send them into the next issue, I thought it came up a little short.
That's fair. When Falcon meets up with his sidekick, the New Patriot, do you got that page in front of you?
Which one?
It's a couple of pages in, about six, seven pages in, and the not Quinjet seems to be landing. Did you notice where they met up? This is one of those little Easter eggs that I'm sure the artist just tossed in, and I thought it was kind of cool. But, you know, if you miss it, you don't lose anything in the story. They're sitting there at Lone Pine Mall.
Okay.
Not only that, but I'm pretty sure, although it's a little hard to make out, that we see the time on it as 1:33, which is, I'm pretty sure, when Doc Brown and Marty were doing their thing. Of course, it was AM versus PM, I think, maybe. But again, it's hard to tell.
Oh, is it Back to the Future?
Yeah. Nice little riff there. One of the things I want to nitpick on is in this cliche story of we've got two gangs, two armies that are going to fight. Let's go broker the peace. When Patriot's going and talking to, what is that group? I guess the Kings. At one point he starts out with, some Spanish. Then when he's talking again, it looks like he's in English, but at the end of that scene, the leader of the Kings is, hey dude, speak English, your Spanish sucks. And I'm like, how are we supposed to know Patriot was not speaking English? You know, back in the day, they'd put those kind of angled brackets, like the greater than less than signs, around that text, indicating it's in a foreign language. There'd be a footnote saying, hey, it's Spanish. We've translated it for you because, well, we're that kind of nice guys as a creative team or editor or whatever. That doesn't happen these days. The closest I've seen is over in the new Superman title, where the Chinese is written in black, but the English is in blue or whatever. Which, I don't know how that does for the colorblind, but it's, to me, not radically different than doing the angled brackets in how foreign languages used to be dealt with. But the one that really kind of annoyed me, and I'm trying to remember where it was. Oh, I think it was when Falcon, a few pages earlier, was talking to that gang that gang. And the issue of trust comes up, and here's his line. My best friend, who was a symbol for all that's great about this country, lied to me for decades. Obviously, he's talking about Steve Rogers, Captain America. And clearly, Sam feels Cap was lying to him for decades about him, which I thought was a really strange thing to say. First, I would think even from Sam's perspective, he should understand the timeline around what happened at Pleasant Hill and that Cap was, you know, swapped or whatever, and this new bad Cap happened, which is why there was a real Cap to save the day or whatever. And it's one of those that maybe he didn't see it that way, maybe he doesn't, I don't know, but it's like, well, my interpretation of events and his are clearly different. Okay, fine. But decades. I don't think Captain America, Steve Rogers, has been out of the ice that long, much less has known Sam and worked with Sam for decades, plural. A decade, sure, I'll give him that. But it seemed like the writer was mixing up kind of the our time and the published duration versus the narrative time. And in story time, sure, Sam could feel that he'd been lied to for years, certainly. Decades, not so much.
But to your point, when Steve Rogers came back and righted the ship, that really hadn't been occurring. It was the cosmic cube that had placed those thoughts in his head. He hadn't really been doing Hydra for decades.
My interpretation of that, and we're getting a little spoilery on Secret Empire, for which I apologize to any listener who isn't current on that, but this is clearly spinning out of that with Falcon. My take was during event at Pleasant Hill, up until then, Cap had been the stand-up all-American we know him to be.
Right.
The Cosmic Cube, Kobik, swaps him out and changes his past history, which is how Hydra Cap, complete with the Hydra tattoo, had never been noticed before because he hadn't existed before. It's like an alternate reality version got swapped in, essentially, which is how we had the real Cap for Kobik, the Cosmic Cube, to bring back. So...
But I assume that the Avengers have a debrief after major events and talk these things through.
One would hope. It's not like they've set up a huge history of them having mission logs that all new members are expected to read cover to cover and all of these things. I mean, they absolutely have that. There is probably at the Avengers Mansion Tower or wherever the hell they're staying these days, a thorough file that you could read for every aspect of the Secret Empire stuff were you an Avenger and had security clearance or whatnot.
It's probably even illustrated with word balloons.
Ooh, could be. Possibly even by Steve Rogers himself.
It's possible.
So, I don't know. It's one of those things, if you're going to pull that kind of a stuff up, when it feels just the timeline's wrong and stuff like that. I don't know. That annoys me a little, but ultimately it doesn't matter to this story.
It is a mistake on a couple of different levels, though.
Yeah. And one that I think the editor, even the writer, should have caught. But to me, the bigger problem was a villain creating a divide in society like this and pitting two forces against each other has been done to death. And frankly, better. Everything from the hate monger stories on up and down to the Psycho Man, to you name it, this was okay. It was fun to see these characters going at it and stuff, but I was hoping for a more compelling first issue and something that wasn't... I guess it didn't feel like the writer and the artist were on the same page, because the writer felt like he had to explain why at that Lone Pine Mall, Patriot shows up out of costume and is then, in clear view of whoever's watching, suiting up. It's like, dude, I know you're a rookie, but suit up before you get there. It was an entertaining story and stuff, but I think it could have and should have been better. And like I said, there's a lot where I could just nitpick this to death if I wanted to. But it's not bad. It's just, for a first issue, I think you need to go out of the gate stronger. And I was disappointed that they didn't.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And yeah, I think where the DC book had a stylized art that... You know, I don't think it's going to be right for everyone. I think this art is a little below average. I don't think it's a strong artist's rendering in here. Let me look and check who that guy is. Cassandra, is that right?
Joshua Cassara. Cassara.
Joshua Cassara.
Not a name that rings any bells, but I'm really bad with creator names.
And the writer Rodney Barnes, he wrote a passable story that. Is okay, but nothing special. And coming out of the gate, a new number one, you're going to get some eyeballs on there that you're not going to get normally. You need to be a little stronger, I think. So I think this is below average, and I give it a C-.
I can understand that. For a second there, I thought you were going to claim that the only reason Rodney Barnes got the assignment was nepotism. Clearly, he's somehow related to Bucky Barnes, but
gotta be great-great-grandson or
something. I'm liking what they're doing with Falcon and stuff. I'm going to be probably a little overly charitable and go with a B minus on this. I think it could have and should have been better, but it's not one of those where I felt they should be kind of embarrassed to have put it out. But it is too competitive of a market for this quality of material to stick around for too long. They need to up their game.
Yeah.
That's really all there is to it. Shall we move on to our other title?
Yeah.
This is Fighting American number 1 from Titan Comics. There is something kind of humorous about a British publisher doing basically a Captain America style hero. I am not that familiar with the original Simon and Kirby work on Fighting American. So I can't say if this is true to the character or not. I will say that starting the first issue with a full page of exposition of the story thus far to set up the backstory and the origin of the characters, I'm going to say that's not the best way to start a story. You know, it's a first issue. First issue of a new title by this publisher, yada yada. It's not like it's just a renamed or revamped title. There shouldn't be a story so far to recap if we're coming in clean, and apparently we're not. And likewise, when we actually get to the first actual story page, the first caption, 62 years later. Later than what? Turns out these guys are time hopping, so okay, I get that, but odd way to start the story. And I was expecting a fairly straightforward kind of Captain America riff, because I mean, it's similar character, it's Fighting America, and he's more or less Cap. Speed Boy instead of Bucky, a few cosmetic changes or whatever. That is not where they went. I mean, there's enough of that window dressing to set it up and set that expectation clearly. But where they end this issue was very much a sets up a different kind of a story than the typical fish out of water Captain America thing. I mean, there'll be aspects of that, but it looks like it'll be a bit, I'll say darker or more twisted, but there's a certain gotcha aspect to this where clearly the Fighting American was played. And I started to suspect that the minute the professor who invented the time travel, his nephew was really seen, and the professor's smacking him upside the head with, shut up, kid, you bother me, kinds of things. And just kind of a, hey, you're here, we gotta go back so you can go clean the test tubes and the Petri dishes. And I'm like, you know, World War II era cleaning of Petri dishing sort of lab assistants generally don't go well. Now, I'm using a small sample set, I will admit to that, but my reference point here is Per Degaton, who from the JSA and All-Star Squadron over in the DC Universe, he was the Petri dish test tube cleaning assistant to the professor over there who had invented time travel. Now, this professor, in fairness, had repeatedly invented time travel because all the stories kind of undid themselves after the JSA or whomever fixed everything. So when we get to the end and we get kind of the twist there or whatever, it's like, okay, I'm not too surprised by that. And it actually, when this kid becomes, what was it, Kid Chaos, and the Fighting American, instead of getting all this weaponry and things the professor promised him, the kid's like, yeah, we came back. I killed him. You're stuck. Have fun. And I'm like, wow, what a clever way to get the heroes out of your way for 62 years. They're in the future. They don't know how to come back. You've got the time machine. You're set. Now, whether it plays out that way for Kid Chaos or not, don't know. But it took what otherwise would have been a fairly pedestrian, almost cliche riff on Captain America and spun it into a, I thought, fairly interesting direction.
Well, I assumed this was based on some existing property that I needed to know this long page of exposition to understand. So yeah, why did I need to know that Johnny Flagg is dead and his kid brother now inhabits his reanimated super strength body? Why do I need to know that? And if I need to know it, why can't you just show me in a number one issue? That was weird off the, and unless it was like a new volume of something that it was renumbered.
So why not have that in the story, is your point?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's kind of how I feel about the Marvel recap pages.
Yeah. It's kind of weird.
It's a crutch.
Then there's so much of it that never came up.
Yes.
In the story. I mean, none of this came up. This book, I was on a roller coaster. This was a roller coaster book for me. I started off thinking, obviously, this writer does not have English as his first language. There's a lot of problems here. Now wait a minute. They're messing with me. Okay, this is obviously tongue in cheek. They're just being strange for strange sake, and the punchline's coming. And then it would kind of turn a corner, and I'm like, okay, they're serious about this, and this is the type of story they want to tell and the way they want to tell it. And okay, settle in. So it was interesting. The writer is Rennie.
Gordon Rennie.
Yeah. He's Scottish, and he denounced comics in 2008, never to return to comics because he was going to go write for video games where all the money was.
That's what I look for in a comic writer. Somebody who's denounced comics.
Denounced in 2008, and he's off to make his millions in the video game industry. And now he's back, and he's back with this. And I don't know. It just started off so obtuse and weird and just really stilted language. And it was really tough to read. And it felt like it got either settled into the world or he got better at telling the story as the book progressed, because I at least got it a little bit. I'm not saying it's for me or it's something I really enjoyed, but I didn't feel like I was being punked throughout the reading of this comic by the time I finished it. So that's good. The art style is okay. I didn't mind it, but it wasn't great. Some of the characters are just really, really drawn in a style that's harkens back to a time that I don't know if really existed or is maybe from the Golden Age or something. And, I don't find it, you know, nostalgic. I'm not nostalgic for that. So, didn't like that much. The stuff with, oh my goodness, it's 2017 and look at how this thing happens in this technology. And, it's been done better in other books. And, so that I found really tiresome. And there was a lot of golly gee Willikers fighting American, and just a language and a dialogue that I didn't find endearing at all. So this missed for me in a lot of ways, and just is probably not a book that's for me. And you might like it better if you like something like this. I'm trying to think of something that would. I mean, this is a poor man's Astro City, maybe.
No, not even. But close.
Not even. I'm trying to think of something that this is akin to, and I can't because I don't read anything like this.
Supreme. It's a poor man's Supreme, starring a Captain America riff versus a Superman riff.
Okay, there you go.
There's
another book I don't read.
It's not coming out these days.
Okay.
This is one that's a little hard to get a grasp as to exactly what direction, tone, style they're aiming for and trying to get here. And this was billed as a direct continuation of Simon and Kirby's classic series. Didn't read it, don't know, maybe this is perfectly in line with it, but well before my time.
Yeah, I guess like with Commandy, you know, and the Commandy Challenge, I didn't read the original Commandy. But when I read those stories, I get a sense for what it was like, and then enjoy the story being told.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this is spot on, but it doesn't work for me at all.
Aspects of it worked for me, but I guess the part I enjoyed the most was like the last three pages.
Yeah.
Which I kind of saw coming, and it's like, oh, well, I wonder where they're going with this. So it looks like it's definitely not just going to be a their telling of Captain America, but a bit more of a almost subversive version of that story. But there were parts of the story that were a little unclear what I should be taking out of it. At one point, one of the bad guys from the past is running around and, you know, as everybody's got their cell phone on fighting American and stuff. This guy's making a getaway, and he comes across a bunch of people in costume. And I'm like, are they heroes? Are they cosplayers? I can't tell. And I don't have enough to go on here because I don't think they ever once say a single word, you know?
Yeah, so that was weird.
It was unclear. It's interesting enough that I'm going to keep going with it, but it was certainly not so great that it's got any sort of a lockup by pull list. And the fact that, you know, it was really the last three pages that kind of turned things around for me. If it was just more of the same of, oh, look, they've got shiny pocket notebook thingies they're waving at us. It's like, okay, I know what a cell phone is. I get he doesn't, but I'm not getting anything out of any particular enjoyment out of that aspect of the storytelling. Your point that at least a paragraph or two of the opening exposition was completely unnecessary. Yeah, I agree with it. But the whole, you know, he's in his brother's repaired body or whatever, that there's something just kind of creepy about that, that I don't know if they're ever going to play with or not. Like I said, I don't know where they're going with this. Certainly, I don't think it's a must buy if you like the character or like this sort of almost subversive take on a character. It might be worth checking out. The art is certainly not one I would say, you know, is worth picking up solely for that. It's, again, I feel a dated style. But if you want a direct continuation of Simon and Kirby's classic series, and if this is indeed is a true and representative or good continuation of it, I don't know, but it's here. It wasn't bad. I liked it, but it's one that not the strongest of starts and could easily fall off my pull list, depending how it goes for the first arc. So I'm probably going to go, I was going to be a little nicer to it than I'm going to be. I'm going to go with a C+ on this. I was thinking about the B-, but there's really just not enough to hang my hat on.
Yo, no, definitely not for me. I gave it a D. I don't recommend it. I don't know who this would appeal to, so I didn't like it at all.
Understandable. Not everything is for everybody, and that's fine. So I've still got quite a bit to read. I think I read about 66 comics since we last recorded. I'm not positive about that, but that sounds about right. Just got my DCBS shipment with another 63 comics, three of which we've just talked about. That puts me, I think, somewhere around 123-ish or so, or at least it would, except I also got my comic shop order that I placed since last week. That'll have another two dozen or more comics. Those are things that, I missed some comics, and as I was starting to catch up, it's like, wait, I missed this a couple of months back or whatever. So I'd been meaning to place an order with them anyways, so that's some of that. And then I don't know how much reading I will or won't get done before we record again or before I get that next DCBS shipment, which has about another 55 comics. So if I'm not careful, I'm going to be back at about 200 comics in pretty short order. They're just coming so fast. And some of them are good reads, but some of them are just okay.
Yeah, I can see how they pile up. I have my own stack that's getting a lot thicker than it used to be. So that's bumming me out because I was doing pretty well there for a while. And now I'm even behind a little bit on DC and some of the stuff I wanted to read. I'm just reading more. I'm reading more than I was before, so that's kind of killing me. I just finished listening to your previous spotlight. It was really good. A little shorter than normal. Didn't seem like there was many varied clips. So people got busy or whatever. But we want to redouble your efforts and get some more voices back on the preview spotlight. It was a good turnout, but not a great turnout. We'd love to have a great turnout for that.
There were a couple of people who'd been submitting over the last couple of months that just, you know, I guess didn't have time this month or whatever, that happens. It was feeling a couple of days prior to the deadline where it's like, I usually have a bit more by now. And again, different times of the year, people can send stuff and it comes down to, are they excited about what's in previews or not? But that one completed 10 years of preview spotlights with 120 episodes. I find those time-consuming to do, but a lot of fun because it's fun to see what people are excited about, what do they know about these things that I don't, and invariably I add a few things to my order in the process. But certainly I'm hoping more people kind of participate the next time around. The online solicits are already coming up as we record this on October 16th. By the time this episode goes up on the 23rd, they should all be pretty much available with the consumer order form and those other sorts of things popping up on the Diamond site. Definitely by then all that should be up, because Previews itself comes out on the 25th.
Yeah.
So, matter of fact, another day or two as we record this, some of those files should be available for me. I will have to look for those. Since Previews is coming out the 25th, that means November 4th is going to be when the deadline is, that bright and early, that Saturday morning. Again, feel free to get stuff in early. You don't have to have Previews. There's a lot of the solicits, like I said, are available online. And then the following Saturday, November 11th, will be the teleconference, 7 p.m. Central Time. We just had that this past weekend. And when I say we, it was really just Randy and I. We had a great conversation for an hour and a half, 2 hours or whatever. But he was the only one who was able to make it this time around. So, you know, that happened too. If you can make it, great. If you can't, fine. If you're planning on making it though, please let me know on the forum and such. Otherwise I may spend the evening, you know, reading comics or watching a movie or something like that. Don't know. But a great, again, conversation with Randy. It was a lot of fun. Enjoyed that. So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
Hey, I think that does it.
Cool. Join us next week as we discuss Superman number 33 from DC, Incredible Hulk number 709 from Marvel, and Maestro's number 1 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.